Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 244.
On today's show, we rewrite history three times in three different places.
Let's dig a little deeper and keep rewriting those textbooks and these podcasts. Welcome to the Archaeology Show. Over there is Rachel.
And over there is Chris.
Hey! That's the dumbest thing I've ever done.
That's the worst intro ever. We're never doing that again.
Oh my God. Hold on a second. So we're rewriting human history today.
Oh, are we?
Which is our favorite thing to do in articles.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. The fact that I could find at least two articles that literally had that in the headline within a few weeks of each other.
Like exactly those words, yeah. Rewriting human history.
Yeah. That's not a little bit stupid.
Yeah. And so. I'm guessing everybody can guess what one of these topics is going to be because it has been all over everywhere.
Yeah. All right. So the first one, at least one of the articles we found, is titled "A Prehistoric Pyramid May Have Just Rewritten Human History." And let me start by saying, human history, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there, at least two of these take one site in one tiny corner of the world and rewrite all of human history.
It's a bold claim.
Like, that's a lot of humans.
It's a lot of humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you writing all the history? Why not just, like, the history of that area?
Right.
You know, now, this particular one is pushing back or attempting to push back something that is, quote, one of the oldest ... right? So I guess in that sense, you're putting a period on humans and you're saying, hey, humans have done this a long time ago, even though it was just right here.
Right.
So if it's the oldest thing, then I'll give them that. But it's probably not.
Right. So apparently the existence of a pyramid older than the Egyptian pyramids means human history needs to be totally rewritten.
Yeah. In this particular case.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the pyramid we're talking about here is Gunung Padang in Indonesia, which you may remember is episode one of the Ancient Apocalypse show by Grant Hancock that aired on Netflix about a year ago. And there's new research out. And first off, Graham Hancock tweeted out or X'd out or
What do you call them now?
They're
still tweets,
right? Elon'd out. he wrote a Musk.
He musked.
Yeah, he musked that. He musked that this pyramid. Well, he mentioned the pyramid. He said, hey, this is episode one of my show.
Yeah.
And the archaeology mafia didn't like it. And then he said now he feels vindicated.
Yeah.
And posted an article from Science Alert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this article is from, well, Science Alert mentioned an article that was in a journal called Archaeological Perspection, which is just like a small peer-reviewed journal.
Yeah, scientific publication.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. Yeah. Nothing about that journal.
Yeah.
Except for that they let this article through.
Yes.
Without really solid peer review, it seems like. But
right.
Anyway, this is from a geologist over in Indonesia and his team. And they've basically come out and saying that this pyramid, based on some of the dates they took from primarily radiocarbon dating, is at least 16,000 years old, which is 10,000 years older than the oldest pyramid in the world, which is allegedly the Pyramid of Djoser in Egypt.
Yeah. I mean, they're even saying that it could be up to 27,000 years old based on.
Yeah.
So they're really putting big dates out there.
Right. They've got different phases of building.
Yeah.
Right? And the prehistoric portion of it in their quote says, sheds light on the engineering capabilities of ancient civilizations during the Paleolithic era, or what's known as the Stone Age. Mm-hmm. And this is Graham Hancock's entire Ancient Apocalypse show was, oddly enough, not about aliens, but about an advanced civilization that is now gone,
mm-hmm.
like that rose up and is somehow gone now, which I guess, you know, technically you can't rule that out 100%, but you can't rule it in unless you find evidence. And the only evidence he has is things like this that say, well, the people 26,000 years ago didn't have the technology to build something like this. And therefore, dot, 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 somebody else did.
Yeah.
And they left literally no evidence otherwise of their own presence.
Yeah. And like, this is a lot of like reaching too. It's like, taking a hypothesis and trying to force the evidence to fit what you want it to be.
Yeah.
The actual pyramid is really a pyramid shaped mound of terraced earth that has shaped stone on it. And it was built on top of an extinct volcano.
Right.
And we know that it's old. Most estimates put it at just under 2,000 years old. It might be one of the oldest examples of this type of structure on a hill in Indonesia. So that makes it a really important and significant archaeological site. But what they're trying to do, these researchers, is make bigger, grander claims about it and also bring in the geology of the hill and claim that the geology, the shape of it, the terracing on it, the natural terracing is not natural. It was built by man. And that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah. And even the thing is, let's say people, because there are definitely people in this area 26,000 years ago. I mean, that's not, that's not a joke.
Yeah.
That's actual real things. It's not like saying 26,000 years ago in northern hemisphere of the United States, you know, or sorry, of North America. Because that's subject to some debate. That's,
there's still a lot of conversation there. Yeah.
But in Indonesia, I mean, we have existence of Java Man came from Indonesia.
It did,
You know, dating back a few hundred thousand years, right? So we know that people have been there for an incredibly long period of time.
Yeah.
They've been living there, dying there, making civilization there and doing all their things. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that they could have built some mound-like structures, you know, put up some dirt together and done some things. Sure. Go ahead. Why not?
Yeah.
I just, we just don't think the evidence is really there, and that really there was some solid prehistoric structures, maybe a few thousand years old, built on top of this natural formation that maybe could have been terraced or shaped or something like that, but but almost certainly wasn't built.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, this Indonesian geologist, Danny Hilman Nadawijaja. I don't know.
So another place to get some good information about this is the Pseudo-Archaeology podcast that Dr. Andrew Kinkella did. And we'll link to that in the show notes. But he went over this in depth as well. And he pronounced it Nadawijaja. So let's go with that.
Yes. And he is a doctor.
He is a doctor. So you must believe everything he says.
He is an archaeologist of note and part of the mafia.
And actually, I'm totally joking because you should definitely not always believe people because they have credentials in front of their name. Although Andrew's pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this Danny fellow, I'm so skeptical of him. He is a native person, Indonesian person, you know. So I always want to, like, when you have somebody who is native to the area, you always want to take in their views because sometimes they have a bigger knowledge that people coming in to do the work don't have. Like, like Native Americans just have a more interesting perspective on archaeology in this country than white archaeologists do. Mm-hmm. It's just true. But you do have to draw a line somewhere between what is like fiction and what is fact and what is maybe like a little bit of nationalist pride here too. Like, it seems like he kind of just wants Indonesia to like have this crazy old pyramid, and look what he did. He made a huge splash with this article. So, I mean, I guess he's getting what he wants in that respect.
It's like Piltdown Man in England. The people, the perpetrators of that, or at least it's estimated, because I don't think the actual person who put it together was ever found.
Mm-hmm.
But it was speculated that they wanted to put England on the map as the birthplace of humanity and all of civilization. Right.
Because
that's England.
It's like that nationalist pride thing.
So,
but nationalism is a really dangerous thing. It's, I mean, not to go into that too much, but really, like, the whole thing is, it's just a really dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, one of the things here from their article, first off, the author says that it proves the prehistoric age was not primitive. Again, one thing does not prove that, even if this was all true.
And also, primitive is relative. Like, we know that prehistoric peoples were doing some amazing things. Yeah. So, like, okay. Anyway,
The article specifically states that the oldest part of the, quote, pyramid are 27,000 to 16,000 years old, based on a number of tests, including electrical resistivity tomography. That's mapping using electrical resistivity, ground penetrating radar, seismic tomography, another mapping technique, and more sampling and others. And they did some radiocarbon dating and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. We're not refuting really any of that.
No.
What they tested, you know, those tests do show things that are that old and, mm-hmm. and can map things that old. We're just not saying what they actually mapped and tested and saw was actually created by humans.
Yeah.
The jury's still out on that.
The geology is good, right? Like they tested all these geological things and made these conclusions, and that's mm-hmm. that's all good. But like, if you don't have evidence that people were doing things with the things that you're dating.
Yeah.
And I guess we can kind of get into that a little bit now, because one of the things they're saying is that the reason we can say that there was human activity is because of the building that they did and the terracing. It's just that most archaeologists have looked at that and said, well, it just could be natural the way that that happened.
Yeah.
And also there's supposedly like tunnels and caves underneath the hill that they found evidence of using these various techniques. Mm-hmm. But this is like a volcanic lava tube situation, right? Like where you have these natural holes under the ground that don't mean man-made caves. They just mean volcanic tubes and craters or whatever.
Yeah. And the thing that gets me too is the lowest part and the oldest part that they're called Unit 3, which was actually exposed by a little bit of a landslide. And they can see that. They say it was constructed during the time frame of 25,000 to 14,000 years. I mean, what kind of coordinated effort could work over the span of 11,000 years?
Yeah, that is so long.
That is a long time. I mean, they were hard pressed to build a pyramid in a couple generations, right? I mean, like in Egypt, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
But here, I mean, how can you get people to just continuously construct this thing? And if they were so advanced, why did it take 11,000 years to build a hill?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Civilizations like, just do not last for that long.
Like Cahokia did it in the span of a generation again, too.
Yeah.
And Cahokia in the United States here, massive mound, definitely man-made, huge pyramidal structure.
Yeah.
And nobody refutes that. And yet, you know, while it was difficult to build, it didn't take 11,000 years.
No, it didn't. So that's definitely suspect immediately.
Yeah. And then there was a hiatus apparently for about 6,000, 7,000 years. And then Unit 3 was buried around after that, around 7,900 to 6,100 BCE. Mm-hmm. And then a few thousand years later, 6,000 to 5,500, Unit 2 was built. Again, this construction time frame just makes no sense.
Yeah.
And then there was another 3,000 year hiatus and then another construction phase. And Unit 2 was actually excavated and then filled between 1393 and 1499
BCE. Wait, so they
BCE.
Were doing archaeological work on their own? Well, like
that doesn't mean archaeological.
I know, I'm
just
joking.
Just means dug out.
I'm joking.
Yeah, and reutilized.
Yeah.
Now that I believe.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, we saw evidence of that in the Parthenon, right? Where they were burying and unburying things all the time there.
Why not? And maybe those guys visited Greece and saw the Parthenon and were like, hey, that looks like a good idea.
So
anyway, it just means that someone had advanced construction techniques before agriculture was adopted is what they're trying to say.
That's what they're trying to say.
That's what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
But again, there's no other evidence of that. You know, and why didn't they leave something else around? Why, if they had these advanced construction techniques and stone carving and stuff like that, like where's the rest of their stuff?
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't all wood and fabric. Where's the rest of their stuff?
It's interesting you say that. In the Hot Cup of Joe article that we're going to link to, he talks about the one artifact that they do report on, and they call it an amulet, right? It's like mm-hmm. this round thing, and you can see some like sort of wavy shapes on it, right?
Yeah.
And they call it an amulet. Well, researchers around the world who've been given access to this have looked at that and said, no, that's a coin. It's mm-hmm. a coin that was made between 1914 and 1945. Here's one in perfect condition. And they even he's even got this little like map thing, like lining up the points where it matches. And you can see that the design on this supposedly, I think he said like 20 something thousand year old amulet is actually just this coin. So the one, it's going into this, having a hypothesis, a view, what you want this to be, finding something that is legitimately old. I mean, it's at least 50 years old, if not 100, right? And deciding that that fits your many, many, many more thousands of years older idea and just like forcing it into that box. And that's the problem with this research and this study for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the only thing they really dated was some charcoal stuff from carbon 14 dating.
Yeah.
And again, not knowing whether or not that was actually human created or not, but even in the scientific peer reviewed article that they wrote, they had serious doubts about their own carbon 14 dating.
Did they?
Yeah. They said that there's a lot of sources of potential contamination.
Yeah.
They admitted to that.
Yeah.
And so they're not saying that there wasn't. It's just that little side bit of, hey, this could be completely wrong. has been forgotten
it's been drowned by
the media, by Graham Hancock, by anybody who wants to latch onto the fact that they came up with these dates.
Yeah.
And for any true scientific research to be validated, somebody else needs to go out there and really kind of just do this study again and validate these results.
It does.
But you know what? In a lot of scientists like physics, chemistry, that is what people do, especially physics and chemistry. If somebody says, I'm going to make this huge claim and I'm going to write a paper about this, there are labs around the world jumping at the gun to replicate those results because that's how that research gets verified.
Yeah.
But nobody ever verifies archaeological research.
It's a destructive science. How can you, right?
It's either already been destroyed, like you said, and excavated. So it's like you got to take their word for it and there's nothing left. Or, I mean, just it's hard enough to get funding for your own projects, let alone go out and get funding to go do somebody else's work all over again.
Yeah, totally.
You know, maybe some grad student will go out there and try to do this all over again and come up with different results. But, you know, it's doubtful.
Yeah,
anyway,
for sure.
It's doubtful. We need to continue talking about this. So
wait, one more thing. Not to like completely throw them under the bus, but the journal that it was published in, Archaeological Prospection, I definitely read that they are, there's another review going on now of this article by either Nature or somehow in combination with Nature. So potentially there'll be a retraction or at least a critique of it published at some point. So that should be coming. And the question now is like, how did this even get through and get published? Because the entire archaeological community has been like, No. Like, this is not real archaeological science. So anyway, we'll see how that goes and what shakes out from that.
All right. Well, we're going to forget about that and then go rewrite history in Central Europe. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show, episode 244, where we're rewriting pretty much everything we know about archaeology based on three different articles. And this next one is Central Europe this time. So we're moving over a little bit. Nothing ever rewrites human history in the Americas, which is, you know, interesting.
That's because we're babies over here.
I know. So anyway, there was apparently a highly complex prehistoric society that thrived in a region that was thought to be abandoned in 1600 BCE. Yeah. So the people lived here and then it was abandoned. And they were like, okay, nobody lives here anymore. But now they found evidence that people did live there. And that rewrites all of human history.
Well, at least that part of Europe, maybe.
Yeah, well, definitely that part of
Europe. This claim is a little bit smaller than the other claims, right?
Yeah, they did say rewrites history.
They did, yeah.
Not human history, I'll give them that credit.
Yeah, so not all of it.
Right.
Potentially just a little bit of it.
Yeah. This was actually reported as one of the major cultural centers of Southern Europe. This area, it apparently had regional scale influences across the continent and into the Mediterranean based on things that have been found here. And this is all in what's called the Pannonian Basin. It's in modern day Hungary and has influences, again, from multiple nations across Central Europe. This whole area is kind of a crossroads, if you will.
There was a Bronze Age society there that was complex and influential, and they lasted centuries before abandoning, quote unquote, the area in 1600 BCE. And they did it somewhat suddenly, apparently.
Right. Which is always garbage. Like, why do people actually believe that? It's somebody was doing research and excavating out there. Again, probably one person over the course of an academic career or something was in this area. And I don't know. They have dates going up to, you know, or at least evidence going up to around 1600 BCE. And then for whatever reason, they haven't found anything else that dates to after 1600 BCE. So then it's like, why was this abandoned? Now, places do experience a collapse when some of the resources or maybe they were all killed by a rival, you know, whatever.
You might have evidence of something like that.
You
for
might
sure.
see that.
Yeah.
But then there are some places where you don't really have the evidence, like Easter Island. For the longest time, nobody could figure out why they A, built all these heads and then B, disappeared completely. And well, it's probably because they used up all their trees.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't really actually know that.
If you want to use words like collapse and abandon, you have to have actual evidence to back up those things happening, like a fire or a war, like you said.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the evidence, you have no evidence at all, you can't assume that that's what happened. Like, the absence of evidence doesn't prove that that's what happened. Right. It just means we haven't found it yet.
There's a great book that's actually full of garbage by Jared Diamond called Collapse. He wrote Guns, Germs, and Steel, yeah, which is probably his most famous book that came out. But then, yeah, after that, he wrote Collapse, and it deals with the collapse of civilizations around the world, notably Easter Island, the quote unquote Maya collapse, which is not a collapse.
It's not a collapse.
The
yeah.
Roman Empire collapse, which kind of was a collapse, but again, not really.
But not really, because the people aren't gone. They just...
No, and that's the whole point of all this, is the people are generally still there, but maybe the political organization structure that was around them, did collapse and change.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that does happen. And then therefore that really visual influence that they create all these big things and they do all this stuff, maybe that died out a little bit, but the people are still like, I'm just going to keep eating maize.
They're just living their life. Yeah.
You know, having that, what was that chocolate drink they drink down there? Or was that Peru?
In Peru, there's a couple. Know. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, anyway, they're having fun. Yeah. They're enjoying life.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I mean, and they live in Cancun, for Christ's sake. They're just partying it up.
I think I just struggle with the word collapse in general, because it does make it sound like all of a sudden society ended, everybody died. But that's just it's just so much more complicated than that. It's such a simplistic way to look at what happened. Yeah. So, yeah.
Part of this so-called abandonment of this area is supported a little bit by previous research suggesting a regional scale collapse and an abrupt end of the dominance of the area, I guess, culturally, after decades of depopulation.
Okay.
Right? So the fewer and fewer people, and then all of a sudden it was just unsustainable.
Yeah.
Right. So then the current research, though, again,
still
there, suggests that they just kind of adapted to a new normal and intensified their long distance networks and complexity, actually. But it almost sounds like what they were trying to say is people weren't necessarily coming through here anymore as this cultural center.
They were going out
for whatever reason or slowed down. And then these guys were just going out and branching out.
So, yeah.
So there's less evidence of other stuff, you know, in that high quantity being here and coming here and showing these large scale influences, because they were traveling out and trading at a distance.
Yeah, so, which makes sense, because the power, you know, it transitions all the time between places around the world. Like, that's a common pattern. So because it transitioned from one place to another doesn't mean that all of a sudden it collapsed and people were gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the lead authors on here says that they knew all along that societies in Europe at this time were interacting at a continental scale. And that's one of the things Jared Diamond actually talks about in Guns, Germs, and Steel, is the rise of Europe and how it's kind of geologically based, and how, because of the nature of how it's situated, it made it easy for people to interact with each other. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's one thing that actually is true. And they knew about material, the researchers knew about material and symbols from the area, and that they were influential in Europe. They just didn't know where it all came from, some of these other things. And this changes that, providing somewhat of a missing link, right? So when they started expanding out their network rather than people coming through here, again, they just didn't know where all that stuff came from. They've seen evidence of cultures from this area around, but they didn't really know where it came from. And now they've got evidence that it came from here.
Yeah, it was probably just dispersed rather than concentrated in one complex or something like that, right?
Yeah. Interestingly, they identified 100 new prehistoric sites using Google Maps. Mm. And you know what? I love maps. And sometimes when we get into a travel binge and we're planning, I'll just look at some place and then I'll just zoom in close on the satellite and just kind of scroll around.
Yeah, you just kind of start scrolling and all of a sudden I'll be like, what are you doing over there? And you're looking at the mountains nearby or something.
I know. But you know, the crappy thing is I won't know if I'm seeing something that nobody else has seen.
Right.
Unless you do the research and you say, oh.
And you have the map of all previously recorded sites and that kind of stuff in front of you.
Yeah, you need the previous research.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
He was like, oh, this looks interesting, but is it just something everybody knows about or something people don't know about? Just because there's a satellite image of it doesn't mean people know about it.
Right.
Yeah. Satellites are dumb. They just take pictures.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
So the sites are in an area that encompasses 8,000 square kilometers. And the evidence says these small settlements spread out from former centers that were abandoned. And it's a shift from intensive to extensive settlement patterns. So intensive in one spot, as opposed to these smaller spots that there's more of them spread out around this area.
Yeah. They were harder to find up until now because they're more flat settlements, so to speak, literally flat, with ditches around them instead of ramparts, which are built up and more easily identified using other methods. So,
right. You can't visually see them probably as easily from the ground, maybe.
Not from the ground and not even from a lower altitude.
Yeah,
it takes
that
satellite imagery to really pull it out.
Right.
So the satellite imagery that they use to to find some of these sites initially, they backed up with random excavation, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, random like sampling, yeah. you know, on some right. of those. Mm-hmm. So they also say that climate change in the region could explain some of this. They said also it could also be just what was happening and not necessarily a cause, but there was climate change happening.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
So mm-hmm. they might have just adapted and overcame, but it may not have had an influence on the growth or decline of the society one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you don't know, in most cases, we do now because we're aware of it, but we don't know that climate change is happening when it's happening.
Right.
Even mm-hmm. on a generational scale, you know, you might think back and say, oh, grandpa said it was really warm here or really cold back in this time. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. You're just not really aware of it.
Yeah,
climate
totally.
Change is so big.
So what's really new is the way everything fits together to reveal a complex and well-organized society. And it seemed to downplay hierarchies, too. So just like totally different from what it was before mm-hmm. this time.
Yeah, the excavations there revealed that sites that were bigger than others and had management by a smaller group. So there were spaces that not everyone in the community could enter. So they were mm-hmm. saying there was just a different sort of political organization, I guess, mm-hmm. than previously thought.
Oh, yeah. So like government kind of spaces where yeah. not everybody's yeah. allowed to go, basically. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And they noticed in burials, too, that there was not very many prestigious burial goods. And a lot of them were really similar from that time frame.
Oh, it was communism.
Yeah, well.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all wearing gray and they had like bread. It was weird. Yeah. So.
Sure.
Yeah. They did conclude that there was a complex political order and not everyone was treated the same, but okay. that this was downplayed and such divisions weren't that important. I'm interested to know how they actually know that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it wasn't really explained very well.
Yeah, and I wonder if... So they found all these new sites by using the aerial images, and then I'm sure they were probably looking at previously recorded sites as well and kind of picking out the details from them. And
yeah.
when you do this kind of work, I think you have to be very careful to not just pick and choose what you want to see and what fits your hypothesis. Kind of like what we were talking about in the last article, although I am in no way comparing them because this seems like it's good science mm-hmm. and it is really truly helping fill in a picture in an area where we didn't have one before. However, you know, I just would, it would be interesting to know like how much of what they were taking from these previously recorded sites and from the new sites they found, like how much is actually fitting this image and how much
yeah.
kind of doesn't fit. And they sort of like set it over here for later analysis. Maybe, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that we've rewritten the history of Europe, or at least Central Europe, we're going to go down to Spain and challenge some archaeological assumptions. And, you know, they didn't say this in the article, but we're going to possibly see the 3,000 plus year old history of the LGBTQ plus community back in a minute.
Nice.
Welcome back to The Archaeology Show, where we are rewriting human history for episode 244. And
this
yeah.
is kind of, this article is kind of rewriting human history, more like human assumptions of what it's more like rewriting modern assumptions of what people were and weren't in the past based on,
which is I feel what literally every article does.
Yeah, true.
It presents new evidence and rewrites everything.
And yeah. So isn't archaeology like always rewriting something?
Always.
Like every article.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about archaeology is I think some of the people who are a little bit archaeology adjacent, like Graham Hancock, and try to say there's the archaeology mm-hmm. mafia and yeah. everything's rigid and we all believe this. It does seem that way when you write a textbook that says this, 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 and this happened in the archaeological record.
Right.
You never really say maybe, could have, I think it did, you know, stuff like that. You just say based on the evidence, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And then we have no problem saying when new evidence shows up, okay, based on the evidence,
now this is what happened. Yeah.
Right. We just don't have a problem doing that. Yeah. But literally the rest of the world does have a problem because they're used to things that are more hard sciences.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when the Large Hadron Collider finds a new particle, that's not, oh, maybe we found a new particle. No, mm-hmm. that is a new particle.
Yeah.
And you can replicate that result.
And there's examples of this in non-archaeological sciences, like Pluto, I think, is a really good example.
Yeah.
Like the public would not let go of Pluto being a planet, right?
And it's because most people grew up with Pluto.
You grew up that way and you just did not want to stop saying that there were nine planets and Pluto was the smallest one, you know?
And now it is a planet.
Wait, it is a planet again though, isn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, God, I don't even know.
I'm with Neil deGrasse Tyson though. He's the one that actually came out and said it's actually not a planet.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that it was even called a planet before was made by definitions that people assigned to the word planet. And all uh-huh. astrophysicists did was they basically tightened up their definitions yep. a little bit. And Pluto no longer fit the definition of a full-fledged planet.
Exactly.
You know, so It's just, it was an arbitrary designation to begin with.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like that kind of stuff happens in archaeology all the time too, because a lot of times you're just making, you're just drawing conclusions based on what you have in front of you. And then you have new stuff in front of you and you have to change the conclusions, change the parameters sometimes. Like, it just, that's just science. It is what it is. Graham.
Right. All right. Well, let's talk about a little bit of gender fluidity in Southwest Spain. Yeah. So this was a 3,000-year-old funerary stone slab that was found. And again, it's challenging longstanding interpretations of gender and social roles in ancient societies, and specifically around here because, well, first off, the article says in ancient societies, and I'm like, all ancient societies or just like right here, right?
Because, well, yeah, I mean, you can only apply it to the culture that this is found in specifically.
It's difficult to apply it elsewhere, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
It should make you think, if you're not already doing that, about your assumptions in other places. But
you definitely should. Yeah. And that's what gets archaeologists in trouble, is when you, again, go in with an idea and don't think outside of your assumptions or the box or whatever. So, yeah.
Well, these stone slabs are called stelae. Generally, anything that's like a long, tall stone slab, whether it's standing or laying down, it's called a stelae. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure where that word comes from.
I don't know the origin either.
It's Latin, but I'm not really sure. Anyway, they're common in cultures all over the place, including Egypt and Central America. I mean, everybody's taking long pieces of stone and carved on them.
Would a gravestone be considered a stelae? Kind of?
I guess technically it would be, kind of, right? But since that has more of a defined purpose.
It does.
We call them headstones or gravestones.
Yeah.
So there's also footstones too. Would those be stelae? I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, often steles are gravestones.
Yes.
As they say in the article. Mm-hmm. And they're usually decorated with engravings, text, and often painted as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they depict important people. So there's an actual figure carved onto the stelae. Mm-hmm. This one was found in the burial complex of Las Campanillas.
Campanillas?
Yeah.
Anyway, Campanillas?
In Canaveral de Leon. Mm-hmm. That's what the area is. And it includes an engraving of a human figure with a detailed face, hands, and feet.
Mm-hmm. And the person has a headdress, necklaces. Okay, great. Maybe a lady, right? And also two swords. What? What is going on here?
Ladies can't have swords.
Ladies can't have swords. Guys, come on. And it was found by Durham University archaeologist Dr. Marta Diaz Guardamino.
Does that trigger you a little bit? Durham University?
No. Durham is a place. Duke is a university that I hated. So, because I went to Chapel Hill.
All universities in the triangle there that weren't Chapel Hill.
No, we did not. Honestly, it's been so long since I was in college. I don't have any hate for anybody at this point. But so apparently we used to think that stelae depicting the headdress and necklace would represent a female, like I was just joking about.
Yeah.
And then weapons, of course, would be assumed to be male. But, you know, not always true, right? Mm-hmm. The figure on the stelae has clear male genitalia. So there you go. Not always true.
And I was kind of making a joke about the whole LGBTQ plus thing. But, you know, honestly, gender fluidity has probably been a thing for a long time in many, many cultures.
Yeah.
And people, we just have different terms for it these days. And people identifying as something, or maybe even not even identifying as something other than what they were born or what their genitals say they should be.
Yeah.
But I think there was, In a lot of cultures in the past, there was probably a lot less stigma around, you know, women doing one thing, men doing another thing, a man wearing a headdress, for example, you know, or, you know, having some sort of female garments on or something like that. Maybe in some of these cultures, there just wasn't that stigma
that
against
hard
you.
Line.
Yeah, you have to wear this and you have to wear that if you're a man or a woman.
Yeah, that hard, you know, separation between what women did and what men did. That's definitely possible. I think another thing that's interesting, too, and I just heard a podcast about this, the roots of the trans, not the trans movement, but just trans people in history. Mm-hmm. And it goes back so much further than you would think it does. There are many people who were born and didn't feel like they belonged to the sex that they were born into. And they chose to live their life in the opposite sex. So the story I heard was about a person who was born a woman and lived their entire life as a man because that's how they felt. And that was 150 years ago that this article yeah. was talking about. So like, or maybe not quite that long, maybe 100 years ago. But either way, we know that that happened in the past and that very well could have been what this person was, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe it's an early example of a trans man, or like you're saying, maybe it's more of a less emphasis on what men could wear and what women could wear. So yeah. Who knows?
All right. Well, with that, we're going to go erase the entire back catalog of this podcast because we've rewritten this.
Oh, we just rewrote it. Yes. So
we got 243 other episodes to re-record.
Does that mean we're going to like rewrite it every time and there's only ever going to be one episode of this podcast available?
Every episode of this podcast will be episode one.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, that's what we do. We rewrite things.
Indeed. All right. Well, we're going to rewrite ourselves out of this podcast right now. So that was terrible.
That was awful.
Okay. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.archpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.